You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Thursday to you. We appreciate you being here. We're getting geared up for a busy, busy weekend here in Fayetteville. You got a football game, you got a men's basketball game, women's basketball plays over at Bud Walton Arena tonight, NCAA soccer tournaments in town. Lots and lots going on. Chip Souza here with me. A little bit later on our show today, you will hear from Kyle May. He is the executive director of Arkansas Edge NIL Collective. He joins us at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club on Thursday, and we'll play that interview, that Q&A interview with you here in just a little bit. But first, we're going to talk Razorback football. The Razorbacks against Louisiana Tech Saturday at 3 o'clock over at Razorback Stadium. It's Senior Day. We don't know exactly who all's walking yet. Of course, it's such a new era that, you know, they can walk, and they may walk again next year. You just never know what's going to happen with them. But the Razorbacks and the Bulldogs getting underway at 3 o'clock. Both of these teams still have bowl hopes. Louisiana Tech, they would have to win out to make a bowl. Arkansas could clinch with a victory over the Bulldogs on Saturday. And, you know, I thought Nate Allen had an interesting column for us earlier this week, and he said, you know, there's no minor bowl game when you have a team that's coming off a 4-8, 1-7 season.
He's right about that, yeah.
And, you know, so we don't know where they would go to a bowl game, but, you know, to get to a bowl game is, whether or not you're happy with the results of this season, it is a step back in the right direction relative to where they were last year. We'll see how the season ends. I mean, they could potentially go 7-5 if they go up to Missouri and they take care of business this weekend.
Yeah. And eight wins is there for them if they can, if they can win, their final two games of regular season and win whatever bowl game they get in.
You know, Sam Pittman was out at the Catfish Hole last night for his radio show, and he talked about the record. You'll hear it right here. Blake will play it for us. But basically about how the record needs to match how good he thinks the team is.
We have a good football team, and the record needs to, match what the team is. And I know we played some really good football teams, but I feel like we have one as well. So we've talked to the kids about that. Today I showed them, about what the UAB game was. And, it was 30-27 with 3-something left in the game. And then after that game, UAB went on a bad string, And the bottom line is you have to be ready to play, and you have to be ready to play however good we are, not however good the opponent is, however good we are. And so that's a big deal to us. We practice that way today. So I feel good about our opportunity on Saturday.
All of these clips from the Sam Pittman Live Show, courtesy of Hogs Plus. He mentioned the UAB game, and I spent some time yesterday talking about that, Chip, the fact that this week kind of sets up like that week did. They were a big favorite to beat UAB, but they were also coming off a game where they lost, where they gave a good effort, and they felt like they could have won the game. Now, Texas, they didn't give that game away like they did against Oklahoma State over in Stillwater the week before they played UAB, but it is similar in that you've got a team that you're expected to beat like a drum, but you've also got that letdown factor from the week before, and that's one of those things that's really hard to navigate and really hard to even predict how a team's going to react.
Well, follow their pattern, what they've been all year long. They've had a good game followed by a clunker, followed by a good game followed by a clunker. So if they follow that pattern again this week, it would be a clunker. Hopefully, it's not going to be that, but that has been the pattern all year long.
And, I mentioned this yesterday, they've had a tendency to start slow against some of these types of teams. They played FIU last year, and it was they won the game by 24, but they had a rough start against FIU in the same situation last year, the second to last week of the season. You think about the Liberty game in November a couple of years ago. Obviously, that one didn't go very well, coming off a high the week before of beating Auburn on the road. And so some of it, I think, is just the fact that for these teams, whether it be Louisiana Tech, whether it be FIU last year, this is, I hate to call it their Super Bowl, but it is a huge opportunity for them to come into an SEC stadium, and you're usually going to get their best shot, at least right out of the gate. And you've got to be able to withstand that because it's coming, and I'm sure it's probably coming with Louisiana Tech.
This is going to be a tougher game probably than what a lot of people think it would be, just based on what you're looking at as far as the roster. If you compared the rosters, it shouldn't be a close game. But I bet you it is going to be a much closer game. And let me tell you something, Matt. If they were to lose this game, they're staring at probably five wins. That's, you know, they go on the road to Missouri. That's they haven't won there since Missouri's been in the SEC. You could be looking at a team that could go 5-7, one win better than they were last year, a team that Coach Pittman said, I like this team and I think we're a good team. They got to take care of business Saturday.
I don't know. I mean, obviously this game doesn't factor any into the game this week, but I think back to the last time Louisiana Tech came here in the 2016 season opener. Skip Holtz was the coach of Louisiana Tech. That was an Arkansas team that ended up winning seven games in the regular season, and it took a late touchdown catch, I think by maybe Jeremy Sprinkle, but somebody caught a late touchdown in that game about 5-6 minutes left to give Arkansas a one-point win over Louisiana Tech. I was listening to Clay on the radio yesterday, Clay Henry, and he made a great point. He said these Louisiana teams, he said he can rarely remember when a Louisiana team played a team at Arkansas where they didn't give them a fight, whether it be ULM coming down to Little Rock and playing them tough on multiple occasions, or Louisiana Tech. LSU shows that it's a great state for prospects, and LSU can't take them all. It's kind of like Texas and A&M. They can't take them all.
Right.
And a lot of them end up at these schools like ULM, like Louisiana Tech, for various reasons. And, I think that sometimes you can just kind of gloss over a team like a Louisiana Tech and maybe not think about the fact that they got some talented players on that team that I'm sure once the portal opens, there are going to be some teams out there trying to poach them away.
Well, especially, Matt, if what happens, like the rosters, get reduced, and like, these schools have 150 players in their program because of the walk-on program, if that number goes to 105 and there's 35 to 40 players at a lot of these programs, they're going to have no place to go. Those schools like Louisiana Tech are going to benefit from that.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at this too, Sonny Cumbie. This is a chance for him to put a big feather in his cap. He's a guy that was an offensive
coordinator. He's on the hot seat.
Well, he is, but this is a chance to get a feather in his cap, to get a statement win, to prove that he belongs. He's been a coordinator forever, and this is first head coaching job, and this is a chance here to kind of stabilize his career a little bit. So he's going to pull out all the stops. And let me tell you, that's a guy that played for Mike Leach, and he has a lot of stops to pull out.
You mentioned he played for Leach, but it seems like Louisiana Tech's a team that likes to run the ball more. And so it's a little bit different from what we've seen from Cumbie in the past, whether it be the years that he spent at Texas Tech, or obviously he spent a long time as a coordinator at TCU.
Yeah, he doesn't have the horses there that he has had as a coordinator at TCU and at Texas Tech. But they will do some unusual things. You had mentioned a while ago before we went on the air how they run the Wildcat a lot. Yeah. They will do some very unconventional things.
Well, let's play that clip. Sam Pittman talking about Louisiana Tech playing the Wildcat.
Because I think that's a key matchup for us, is how we defend their running game. They play more Wildcat. For you guys know, that's a non-quarterback snap and a runner type guy. They play more Wildcat than anybody we played this year.
Now, I don't think Louisiana Tech's Wildcat is quite like, for various reasons, quite like when Darren McFadden was running it at Arkansas.
No.
Number one, they don't have a Darren McFadden. Yeah. Number two, they don't have a Felix Jones.
Peyton Hillis.
Or Peyton Hillis, or you go on down the list.
Yeah.
But what I mean by that is that, McFadden, he would pull up and throw.
He could.
He'd probably throw the ball 2-3 times a game out of the Wildcat. Maybe I'm misremembering that, but
he did.
I remember. That seems to be what I remember about that time. Louisiana Tech, they don't really have their athletes that they put back there throw the ball. Whenever they're ready to throw, they're going to bring Bullocks, their quarterback, in, and he's going to pass the ball. But they do have some different players they'll put in there. Marquise Crosby, I think, is the running back who runs it quite a bit. They'll bring some receivers in, and they'll run it with him too.
Yeah,
it's a little bit of a different Wildcat than maybe I think. It feels like maybe they're tipping their hand a lot whenever they bring the running back, the receiver, whoever, to come back there and take the snap, you know it's going to be a running play, I think, more often than not.
But you still have to tackle them.
You do.
And
you have to prepare for the threat of the pass.
Yeah, well, I mean, who knows? They could line up in Wildcat and run a reverse, a double reverse. I mean, they could do a lot of different things out of there. Whatever they can do that can surprise Arkansas, that's what they're going to do. They're going to pull every possible trick and every rabbit out of their hat that they can Saturday to try to get a win here. I mean, their stakes are just as high as Arkansas' stakes are.
And they, for Arkansas, the Razorbacks have got a pretty healthy group of running backs. You probably would have to go back to the Tennessee week.
Yeah.
Going into the Tennessee week. And even then, the Tennessee week, they had Rodney Hill out from the A&M game. So maybe even going back to the A&M game, when Arkansas had this many running backs that were healthy and available.
They have to
was
run
DeBinion, the was DeBinion suspended for A&M? He was suspended somewhere in that area.
I think that's right. That was, what, the fourth game of the season, I think? Something
that
like
was number
that.
Five.
So it was either that game or the game before.
The point being that it's been a while since Arkansas's had – I mean, they think they've got Russell back. He's been practicing all week without any type of limitations from all indications. Quentin Jackson obviously is back in the fold. Rodney Hill's available. We haven't seen him run a whole lot. You've seen DeBinion, you know, factor into the run game a little bit more as the season's gone along. Talen Green looks like he's healthy and able to run the ball again. And so the point being that Arkansas, I think, is going to be able to and going to want to run the ball a lot this week against Louisiana Tech. We think Louisiana Tech is going to run the ball a lot.
Yeah.
It's the old cliche.
Good.
It's
fast game.
Well, it's the old cliche in football, number one, that, you know, whoever can run the ball and stop the run is going to have the best chance to win.
Yep.
But also, when you got two, and you just mentioned this, when you've got two teams that want to run the ball like this, the game goes by faster.
Yeah.
And you don't get as many possessions. And, you know, so I there's going to be a real emphasis, I think, on Saturday. Like, what do you do with possessions? Because this may not be a game where you get 10 possessions. Maybe you only get 8. And there's going to be a higher emphasis on being able to be efficient with your offense.
Well, running the football works the clock. That's running the football is what Arkansas's offensive line does better. They are better at run blocking than they are at pass protection. You know, and Jaquindon Jackson being close to 100%. We don't know how close he is, but he did look good against Texas the other day. He didn't seem like he was having any injury, any issues with the ankle. So having him back, having Braylon where Jaquindon doesn't have to carry all of the load. It can be shared around. So that plays in Arkansas's favor. But, man, Louisiana Tech has a great defense. They have a great run defense.
They have a good defense for their league.
Yeah.
And that's always the question is how does that translate when you're playing a more athletic team? Because I don't think they've played a team anywhere near as athletic as Arkansas is.
No, but I'm going to tell you, if I'm Arkansas, they're going to have to stop my run game first. My run game is going to set up my pass game, and I'm going to make them stop my run game. And I'm not going to give up on it. Even if the sledding gets a little bit tough for a while, I'm not giving up on it.
So Louisiana Tech, they're going to show – obviously, a unique look on offense with the Wildcat. They're going to show a little bit of a unique look on defense, too. They're going to play a robber position. So,
does he wear a mask?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
A face mask. Yeah. But, you know, where you basically have a guy who's back behind the linebackers and he's running just trying to make tackles. He's following the ball. That's basically what that position is. And Pittman was asked last night about how do you block that type of player. And this is what he talked about Arkansas's preparation for that position this week.
People that are trying to play him are trying to block him from the outside in. Well, the guy's already got inside leverage on you. So the only chance you have is to crack him and run outside if that's how you're going to run your scheme. Without going into depth, we'll have different schemes where we can be able to run the ball inside and block him as well. Because otherwise, you're just trying to run a guy from 10 buck two out there to block a guy on an inside run. He's never going to get there. So we're going to try to, you know, change that up a little bit. But he's very, very difficult to get to because of gap control. In other words, they have gap control, and he's extra. And so you probably have to add an extra blocker.
Always love it whenever you can throw Timbuktu.
Yeah, they have a good team at Timbuktu. I've never covered a game at Timbuktu.
The Timbuktu Tigers, they're undefeated this year. So this is, again, it's two unique looks. He mentioned that this week in practice, Arkansas has basically taken away a lot of what he calls good-on-good sessions, where they go, you know, first team
once
on first team. And they've put in they've replaced a lot of that time with extra reps for defending against the Wildcat and preparing offensively for that robber position.
Is this a game, Matt, that maybe Ty Broden could help them in blocking? I mean, he's had struggled catching the ball, but he's a big-bodied receiver. Could he help them blocking on that edge? Because it sounds to me like that's what they're going to have is more wide receiver blocking on this guy more than anyone else.
Sounds like they're going to try to get outside more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe so. You know, I think Luke Haz has been pretty good in the run block this year. That's certainly been an area of his game where he's improved over last season. So I think, you know, you're right. I think you have to have one of those pass catchers that are going to have to, you know, step up and maybe have more of a blocking role in this game.
Well, he's a big body. I mean, I could see him at least, you know, if he doesn't put a helmet on, at least he can get in the way of him. At least he could impede his progression to the ball.
Hey, we want to tell you and get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. It's the most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports analysis, latest in recruiting from Richard Davenport, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. We talked to Arkansas soccer coach Colby Hale yesterday. Hope you'll go back and listen to that.
Very insightful. Yeah.
It was an interesting interview with him as they get ready to play Cal tomorrow night at Razorback Field. It's going to be a 6:30 start for that game. And then there's also an 8 o'clock basketball game tomorrow night. The Razorback men are going to be back on the court against Little Rock. Darryl Walker, the former Razorback All-American, bringing his Little Rock Trojans up to Fayetteville for an 8 o'clock tip-off.
And then also a playoff game across the street, Fayetteville High School.
Which is where I'll be. You've got the Fayetteville High School playoff game against
Pulaski. Good luck parking tomorrow night in Fayetteville.
Against Pulaski Academy. You got two former Razorbacks that are the head coaches in that game. Casey Dick for Fayetteville, Anthony Lucas for PA. If you are not a sports fan, there will be some traffic because at 6 o'clock tomorrow night, they're going to light the square, of the Ozarks. So,
you're going to have to park in Greenland and shuttle to Fayetteville.
I was talking to Andy Shoup, who's our photo editor, about, you know, how are you going to, you know, basically I asked him, I said, can you shoot the soccer game for us on Friday? He goes, oh, my gosh, man.
Let me, the number of things we have to cover.
So, it's a busy weekend here. Women's basketball is back in action tonight over at Bud Walton Arena. They're going to play Oral Roberts. Yeah. Oral Roberts, a pretty good team coming in here.
They are.
Of course, Arkansas, they're not having the best season. A 6 o'clock tip-off at Bud Walton Arena tonight. That game is going to be televised on SEC Network, and the Razorbacks are going to be wearing their turquoise jerseys tonight. Okay. It's a Native American heritage-type night.
Oh, it's awesome.
The second year in a row where they've done that, and Ethan wrote this today on our website. I was going to try to pull it up here real quick before I say it. But they've got two players on their team with Native American heritage, so it's a game that's certainly, I think, meaningful to those players.
Fantastic. That is fantastic.
Yeah, here it is. They wore them last year during, I don't know what game they wore them, but they've got two players on the team here. It's Kiki Smith, who is from the Comanche tribe, and Carly Keats from the Mississippi Band of Choctaw.
And so, I'm just infatuated with the Comanche history and lore, and I've read this book, Empire of the Summer Moon. It's a fantastic book about Quanah Parker, and they were the last tribe to come in to the reservation. They, you know, fought to the bitter end. It's a terrific book. In fact, Taylor Sheridan has bought the rights to the book, and he's going to produce a series about that.
Feels like everything he touches is gold right now.
Yeah, it is.
I was watching something last night, and I saw that there's a new a show from him on Paramount called Landman.
Yeah, with Billy Bob. Yeah,
Billy Bob Thornton and John Hamm and Demi Moore. And
looks like
it could be pretty good.
Yeah, I'm kind of holding off on it, Matt, until I can kind of binge watch it all at one time. So I don't have time to watch every. I can't commit. I can't commit to every week on Sunday watching this. So I got to wait till I can watch all of the and binge the whole thing at one time.
Going back to Colby Hale real quick, if you want to listen to that interview or any of our past podcasts, you can search for them on Apple, Spotify, or the video podcast on YouTube. Just search any of those platforms for Whole Hog Sports. Before we get to Kyle May, Chip, it's a 22-point spread as of this morning You think Arkansas can cover that? Because
I've got
my doubts.
I don't know that the over and under is going to be 22 in this game. I mean, this is, you know, La Tech is a team that scores about 12 points a game, you know, but I think Arkansas wins. I think Arkansas will win it 24-14, something like that's what I think. So I think it'll be about a 10-point spread.
Yeah, I mean, the different sports books have different totals, but it looks like the totals right now between about 48.5 and 50.5. The thing I wonder about is that, you know, both of these teams have shown that they can play defense well.
Yeah.
And we mentioned the running the ball just doesn't give you a lot of opportunities for possessions. I do wonder if Arkansas can cover that 22-point spread. That seems like a little bit of a big spread for an offense that has not played very efficiently this year.
When's the last time they scored 22? Was it against they scored 31 against Ole Miss. Ole Miss, but yeah, that was against, you know, their third and whatever.
I was looking at this the other day. Talen Green, and now you have to remember that he was hurt for the fourth quarter of the Tennessee game and for the second half of the Ole Miss game.
Right.
But the last four games at home, all against good teams, Tennessee, LSU, Ole Miss, and Texas. But in the last four quarters at home, or the last four games at home, I should say, the offense has scored 13, 10, 10, and 10.
That's what
I'm
saying.
Yeah. Leading the offense.
That's what I'm saying.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know that they'll cover the 22, but the oddsmakers always seem to have some kind of insider knowledge that some of the rest of us don't have, and it always seems to get close there. So I'm not discounting it. But it would be nice, Matt, if they could get kind of an extended lead in this game and maybe perhaps rest some of their guys heading into that Missouri game the following week. That would be great. That'd be the best thing that could happen for them.
You can stay on top of all Razorback sports with a digital subscription to the Hogs Illustrated app. It gives you complete access to all of our website content at wholehogsports.com, plus 20 issues of Hogs Illustrated magazine. Monthly subscriptions begin at $17. Join now at hogsillustrated.com/subscribe or call 479-684-5509. When we come back, Kyle May, the executive director of the Arkansas Edge NIL, up at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We're going to get to Kyle May in just a moment. We want to tell you first about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. As we mentioned, Kyle May was at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club today. He is the executive director of the Arkansas Edge NIL Collective, and we had a wide-ranging conversation about NIL, and here it is.
Well, Kyle, thanks for being here. Let's start with the House settlement how this affects NIL, because how many of you know what the House settlement is? Are you aware? We'll go through it here real quick then. Basically, it's the settlement of three antitrust lawsuits in a federal court in California that's going to create revenue share next year. And so the thought with the House settlement originally was that NIL might go away. Mm-hmm. Doesn't look like that's going to be the case now.
Yeah.
How does NIL fit into, let's localize it, how does Arkansas Edge fit into this post-House settlement world?
Yeah. So it is unfortunately looking kind of into a crystal ball, right? Nobody really knows the final details of that settlement aren't really official. It is kind of our best guess of what is coming. There is, as part of the settlement, schools will be able to distribute $20 to $22 million to student athletes as part of that revenue share that Matt said. Really kind of the future of NIL that I see it is kind of the, unless there's more restrictions placed on the settlement, from the full settlement, I think it'll be kind of an like ancillary additional money on top of to help give the schools even potentially some additional advantage in the recruiting process. And, you know, also things that I've heard from some other collectives and some from other kind of folks around the country that I've talked to, they potentially see NIL collectives as kind of the vehicle to actually like process the payments for the athletes, right? Some universities might not necessarily want to bring that all in-house, and so they might outsource it to another company, almost acting like a payroll processing company for the student athletes. So that's kind of the kind of two-pronged approach, but again, it's still kind of like looking through kind of a cloud of haze right now with nothing kind of on paper official, but those are kind of where I kind of see it happening and where I hope it kind of moves forward to for here specifically.
4 months. Is that how long you've been in your role?
Four months.
Take me back to July when you start this job. What did the Edge Collective look like then, and how and in what ways does it look different now?
Yeah, so I'll kind of go even further back just to give some background context for everybody in case they're not aware. NIL really at University of Arkansas started with the first collective that started was under the Razorback Foundation. It was called One Arkansas. Started the Herculean work of Marvin Kasten, who I think spoke last week. Mm-hmm. He led the NIL charge for that. The first, I think it was about 6 months or so, or it might have been a little bit longer than that. But then as NIL kind of evolved, as the space evolved, the foundation university realized they needed to spin off the collective from the foundation for kind of IRS tax deductibility reasons. And so that it spun off, and the university decided to partner with Arkansas Edge, and kind of so our parent company is called Blueprint Sports, and so they spun it off as Arkansas Edge, another collective that not only works kind of raising money, and then the student athletes do charitable work, but also more commercial work, so kind of traditional brand appearances, things like that that help. Help the student athletes be able to earn revenue, earn compensation. And so that has been, it's almost actually a year almost now to the point it was the Duke game last year, I think, where Edge got announced. Yeah. And so it had a really kind of banging start, just a lot of hype around it. And, you know, walking in 4 months ago, I felt like, again, the work is a near impossible task, right? But, I mean, we do the work every day that we can do. You know, walking in, the previous executive director, Chris Bauer, he had set up a lot of initiatives that I have kind of seen through the last few months. He started kind of in process, a number of initiatives that, like I said, we've now kind of seen through to the finish line. It was honestly like the team that we have here locally is amazing, right? We have me and three other folks on the team who do fundraising and also work with the student athletes directly. They're phenomenal team that we have here. And so honestly, there really wasn't a whole lot to change so much. It was, like I said, it was on kind of on track to where it's going now. But really kind of just getting out of the way of the team here locally, right? Getting advice from everybody across the university spectrum that we work with across athletics from the team locally, and really kind of seeing through those initiatives that had already kind of been in motion and starting to build out kind of what the next steps looked like for our initiatives.
So one of the things I hear from people is, how is my money being used mm-hmm. when I give to Arkansas Edge? Could you give us an example? Say like a football linebacker mm-hmm. comes to you. How do you work with that player? What does that interaction look like between the collective and the individual?
Yeah, so we kind of as part of the process, we allocate a certain amount of funding for a team, and then work with a student athlete kind of based on, I guess, lack of a better term, market value, right? And then work with a student athlete to kind of figure out either where the funding is coming from for them or how we make commitments to the student athletes directly with Edge. As far as where the like I said, the contract is with the student athlete directly. And like I said, it's really in conjunction with the player there. And some of them have representation too now at this point. So it's really kind of a multi-layered, a multi-step process, right? I think you might talk about it later, but we're technically not involved in the recruitment process at all. It's really kind of like verboten. Like the university leadership asked me very specifically to not be around recruits just in case, because there have been rumors from other universities, right? I've read stories of like NIL directors and like having clandestine meetings with student athletes, and the University of Arkansas, we don't want any potential breach of trust there with the athletics. But yes, that's kind of the general process. And then every month we work with a student athlete. If we make a multi-month, a long-term commitment to that player, we work with them, whether it's doing charitable engagements or whether we have a commercial partner we're working with to promote their product on social media, that kind of thing.
Are there contracts between yourself and the players? Like, you know, because portal's about to open up. Mm-hmm. Let's say, you know, some star player goes and gets in the portal. What's the relationship like at that point?
You know, I might not have an answer for that because I haven't lived through one yet. Mm-hmm. I wish I had a better answer. But, yeah, so we have contracts directly with the players, right? And so whenever if we ever have a company who wants to work with a player, they contract with us, and then we work with the player, right? And one of the benefits of working with a collective versus just working with an individual directly is that if something happens, if that player does enter the portal and leaves, we have the ability to kind of pivot and work with all the players that we currently have. And like I said, I wish I had a better answer, but I haven't been through it yet. So I'm not really, really sure. Right. I mean, you hope that none of the players enter the portal, right? You want to try to keep as many players as possible. But ultimately you can't stop them. It's their decision, their choice. And so I'll have to unfortunately report back on that.
Do you believe the numbers that you hear about NIL? You know, like for instance, Tennessee came in here 6-7 weeks ago, and the reports are that their quarterback's getting $8 million a year, Nico Iamaleava. Texas came in here last week. There's reports that their starting quarterback is getting several million, that their backup quarterback might be getting like $2 million. Are these believed? Ohio State, they're said to be paying in the $20 million range for their football team. Mm-hmm. They went and they got an all-SEC running back last year, and that was kind of the magnet school for a lot of these guys, the top guys that got in the portal. Do you believe the numbers? Are they inflated? Do schools want to inflate the numbers?
You know, I think it's interesting because you want to, as a university, you want to project project confidence, right? Mm-hmm. And so whether or not those numbers are accurate, again, I have unfortunately no way of knowing if the numbers are accurate. But I mean, just kind of my knee jerk is that there's probably a semblance of factuality there, but again, I wouldn't want to speculate on how kind of accurate the numbers are, again, right? Because like I said, you can honestly say whatever you want, right? On the internet, you can say anything you want. So like I said, I mean, believe them, not believe them, it's kind of up to each person to decide if that's something they're wanting to do. So
I want to ask you about how the Edge Collective works in partnership maybe with the Razorback Foundation, because you're not the same entity.
Correct.
But I think your offices are in the foundation office, so that kind of murkies the water a little bit.
Yeah.
You're going after a lot of the same donor pool. Mm-hmm. You're going after the same donors, quite frankly.
Yeah.
How do you work together because you're trying to get to the same destination, a winning program, but you're asking for the same dollars, but for different reasons. This is an interesting dynamic.
It is. So we work very closely with the Razorback Foundation, like you said, offices in the same building, kind of a carryover from whenever it was under the foundation umbrella. Mm-hmm. And so we share office space now with them. We have to just be in constant communication with them, with initiatives, both initiatives we have coming up, and then also meeting with them regularly to say, hey, I met with this person, I met with that person. Do you have anybody that's talked with you lately of if there's any interest in supporting the student athletes through Edge? And then, like I said, just even to the point of potentially going on meetings with the Razorback Foundation staff, right? I've been to a few lunches kind of in conjunction with the Razorback Foundation just to make sure we're not kind of muddying the waters too much and making sure that kind of one hand, the left hand knows what the right hand is doing. Mm-hmm. And just really staying in constant communication with them. And then also kind of potentially looking at different opportunities for the for those foundation members. So if they happen to own a business, they might give to the Razorback Foundation personally. But if they might have a business, maybe we could talk with that foundation member about potentially doing a corporate partnership or some kind of other partnership that's separate from the money that they might be pulling for the Razorback Foundation.
How do you fight donor fatigue? Because you've got the foundation asking for money. You've got the EDS collective asking for money. You've got the ticket office asking for money.
Yep.
And as a fan, it feels like, hey, they're just coming at me from every side.
Yeah.
And at some point, I'm going to have to tap out.
Yeah.
How do you fight against that?
You know, that's a very good question. The donor fatigue is real, right? A lot of people I've talked to previously has mentioned it. You know, I think there's a few different strategies that I've started to implement and to help kind of combat that or to go against that. And I think one of the biggest things that I'm doing is potentially expanding that donor pool, right? So looking at potentially more out-of-state support from like the Arkansas alumni in the Dallas-Fort Worth area or in the Northeast potentially or on the West Coast, just wherever there might be a large contingent of Arkansas alumni, really trying to find connections within those communities who have a strong belief of what the collective is doing and what NAL does, and then kind of working connections in that market, again, kind of expanding the kind of pool, so to speak, to where we're not hitting up the same people over and over and over again for funding. And then also just having lots of different opportunities to support the collective, right? Whether it is a monthly kind of membership contribution subscription type thing, or even to a point, or even getting into like supporting the collective just with your shopping dollar. So doing something like buying the Tusk beer from Goat Lab is a partnership we did recently that it just allows people to support the collective, but potentially making purchases they might already make. And so really having lots of levels of entry to help support the cause and support the university student athletes, I think has been key to help battling that donor fatigue. And then also, again, exploring other kind of avenues of funding. So one of the reasons that I was brought in is because of my, like Chip said, my background in corporate sponsorships. Mm-hmm. So expanding the corporate partnership pool, whether it's more of a traditional sponsorship, like a traditional marketing sponsorship, or if it's something like a revenue share partnership, where if companies commit to getting new business kind of referred by the collective, they send a portion of the proceeds back to the collective from those new clients that they bring in. So different things like that, expanding the offerings that are available, just getting creative with ways to fund the collective and to fund NIL at the university.
Hey, we hope you're enjoying our conversation with Kyle May of the Arkansas Edge NIL. We'll have more of it, but first a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We'll get back to our conversation with Kyle May here in just a moment. But first, we want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They have been serving their community since 1971. They are committed, professional, and versatile. If you are looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Also want to tell you that Ken Hatfield is coming to the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. That'll be December 19th at noon at Home 2 Suites in Springdale. You can reserve your seats now at OzarksTix.com, OzarksTix.com. Ken Hatfield, the Razorback great player, former Razorback head coach, 2-time Southwest Conference champion winning head coach, will be at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club on December the 19th. We go back now to the HI Sports Club for the rest of our conversation with Kyle May.
Arkansas Edge is the NIL, the official NIL collective. Are there other collectives that are out there that benefit the Razorbacks that are not associated with the university?
You know, I think there might be just like one other local group who does some work, but nothing to the kind of scope that Arkansas Edge does. I mean, yeah. we have direct agreements with 180 plus student athletes and can support all 495 student athletes if there's interest there. So kind of the widest breadth of supportive student athletes that we have, and then working kind of in conjunction or kind of side by side with the athletic department directly, again, just to make sure there's an understanding of kind of the priorities and all that.
Back in September, Hunter Yurecek spoke at the Little Rock Touchdown Club and made a lot of headlines with some of the comments that he made about NIL.
Yeah.
He said Ole Miss had five times the member to their Grove collective that Arkansas has to Edge. And I think he said, you know, if Arkansas was to compete, they were going to have to basically kind of double the Edge collective number, at least for football. I think in the weeks after that, we heard somewhere around 1,000 new members had been added to the collective. What's the overall impact been of those comments?
Yeah, you know, I mean, we did see a spike after those comments, and we've seen honestly steady growth in the weeks that have followed since then. I guess for this whole football season, we've seen pretty steady growth, which is great. From a number of initiatives, those comments, the remarks that Hunter made at the Touchdown Club, in addition to rolling out a new initiative or a new membership level for $10 a month, that's just a general support, right? Another point of entry for people that is available now for folks. So we've seen some growth from that. And every time the Hogs have won with football, at least, we've tried to implement a kind of a Hogs Win UN initiative, right? So new members or upgrading members who sign up get some kind of prize, and then also trying to do something else for our kind of the rest of our members, whether it's like trying to think one of the games we did after Tennessee, any new members got a signed picture of Malachi, the backup quarterback from that game-winning touchdown that he had. And then we also did a giveaway of a signed jersey for all of our members. All of our members were entered to win a signed jersey. So things like that I've really tried to focus on and really kind of plus up the member experience. Kind of got off track of the question, but yeah, so we've seen kind of steady growth. It's definitely kind of a long road, I think, for kind of where we need to be. And it's kind of just incremental growth over time, right? Trying to figure out how we add value to the membership base. What are some, again, kind of creative ways to kind of showcase the student athletes? Really just trying to, like I said, make sure that the people who are contributing monthly find value in that membership, whether it's athletes or whether it's access to like virtual Q&As with the coaches, with the players. We actually just did one last night where we opened up to all of our members a virtual one-on-one autograph / meet and greet session with two of our O-linemen, Fernando and Addison Nichols. It was a lot of fun. There was a number of fans and a couple of small kids on that call who got to meet the players, and they were really excited about it.
So anybody who's ever worked in fundraising, and I know you know this from working with the AMP or the Walton Foundation, you're going to get doors shut in your face when you're asking for money.
Yeah.
When that happens from an NIL perspective, what's the reason that you hear the most?
You know, there's a few different reasons. Usually one of them is just we're not interested, right? They don't necessarily, someone might not necessarily see the value or be interested in funding it. And, you know, you sometimes just have to be okay with that. And same thing with any organization, right? Some people just might not want to support it. And, you know, that's okay. It's their prerogative. And so you just kind of have to keep your chin up, keep your head high, and kind of move on to the next thing. And there's also a number of different things. Donor fatigue, like you said, is something that's very real, that we just always have to be mindful of when we're going out into the community and talking about the collective and Arkansas. Just something to be mindful of, and being okay with the sorry, we can't do it right now. We're tapped out. Like we just can't do it. And you know, I think it's just being okay, like in any fundraising role, just being okay with being told no, door slammed in your face. It happens all the time. You know, I think, like I said, it's just trying to keep your spirit up and remember kind of the reason why you're doing the thing that you're doing, whether it's The atmosphere at Razorback Stadium on a Saturday, or it's the, like I said, the conversations with the student athletes that we get to have. They're great kids, and we just want the world for them. So
one of the complaints that I've heard from people is that there's a lack of marketability from Eds, and I'm sure you've heard this too. There's a person on our message board. They were talking about. They said, "I'm a Broyles Matthews donor, and I've never been contacted directly by Eds." How do you where are you just in terms of direct to potential donor messaging? How does that work, and how do you work on reaching more people who, look, they know you exist, but they want you to come to them. They don't want to come to you.
Yeah, there's a few different ways. We do, like I said, work with both the athletics marketing and also with the Razorback Foundation. Whenever we roll out a new initiative, like for instance the Tusk beer collaboration we did, we rolled that message out to basically the entire athletics department database, some like 150,000, 200,000 people in the database. So kind of some more mass market things of already connected Razorback fans, and then working again kind of directly with the Razorback Foundation. I'd love to know who that person is because I'm surprised they haven't been reached out to. But and then doing just some additional kind of general marketing things, whether it's signage in stadium. We have a video that runs pregame at the football games. We have signs all up around the stadium of getting involved with the collective. We have online marketing. And then we just kind of just general marketing pieces. Like I said, I'm sorry, we're not in Hogs Illustrated. Sorry, but
we can change that.
And so it's just really just continual reiteration, right? I mean, you can shout things from the rooftops, and some just people might not hear it. So it's just constantly iterating and constantly just being kind of, I guess, kind of banging the drum of the organization. And then you really, in those kind of creative revenue generating campaigns that we have done the last couple of months, is another way that our name just, that it just gets out there more. Like, we worked with athletics and doing that Slobbering Hog campaign to get the Slobbering Hog back at Bud Walton Arena, or selling the field goal posts from Tennessee. We sold those to help raise some money for the collective as well. So things like that also just kind of help create buzz on social media, I think, is another way that we also get the word out.
I saw the field goal thing. Did they have to replace the field goal post? How did that work?
I think they were going to have to replace it anyway. I think that's what I heard after the fact. And they actually, I think, already had the replacement field goal posts already in storage somewhere. So they were going to have to take it down anyway. And it was a great kind of hot market initiative that we were able to do that kind of it worked in conjunction with an amazing, amazing win.
So you mentioned the Duke game last year, right around, and then I think 3 months after that, Edge, and this is before you were there, but it started this drive for 5,000 members, and there was a meter on the Edge website, and it was notoriously slow moving. I think it got up to like 782 at one point. I don't even know if it's been updated since then. Yeah. Where are you guys in terms of trying to get to that 5,000 member drive?
We are floating around that halfway mark right now. I decided to take down that thermometer because initiatives like this,
it was
just
broken.
Yeah. Yeah. We initiatives like that tend to take some time, right? And kind of from my nonprofit background, if you have a very public, measurable gauge like that, you got to be sure you have a way to fill it. You better do it quickly. Whenever I came in, I just realized it was going to be definitely a long-term goal to achieve, to get to kind of help create a sustainable base of funding. And like I said, we do tend to see spikes, like whenever the collective kind of makes headlines, whether it's for the comments Hunter made, whether it's our new membership level, whether it's contributing to bring a beloved logo back to center court. It's definitely a longer term campaign than I think we initially thought when they rolled out that program. Like I said, it's just kind of day in and day out trying to get in front of the right people, trying to find people who want to support the collective, and just slowly adding to those numbers. And hopefully, if we can get to a bowl game, hopefully that'll help.
I'll ask you about a few sports before we let you go. I know this, again, this is before you were hired, but from you know, all indications when John Calipari was hired, there was a surge in support for basketball from an NIL perspective. From what you understand, how big was the surge?
You know, I want to say there was probably – that was pretty close after the Drive for Five really started. So I think that kind of made that initial first spike. I want to say probably doubled the number of memberships from where it had really started out as. And you know, it was such a banner hire, right? I mean, he's a basketball coaching legend, and we're so fortunate to have him here. And so I think whenever there's moments like that where we can capitalize on, I think that's something that we have to be mindful of to make sure that we can capitalize and leverage on. Whenever there's a lot of energy around something, like I said, whether it's a big game, whether it's a new coach, whatever that is, really trying to capture those moments and to really, like I said, capitalize on them.
Now, basketball is kind of unique because the Hunt family, they kind of have their own thing going on too that comes alongside and helps supplement whatever you're doing.
Yeah. They do work with one or two players, I think. But, you know, like I said, it just kind of is the facts that anybody can work with any player they want to, right? Doesn't have to. They don't have to work with a collective. There's no like binding clause that student athletes have to work with us. So athletes can go out and source, find their own NIL deals if they want to. They don't have to work with us. But it's just kind of the facts that of the kind of world that we're in right now with the kind of not uncertainty, but with the just kind of, I guess, unguardrailed of the NIL world right now that we're in. But
you may this may be a little bit of a different way of asking something I asked earlier, but Pittman said something, I think it was yesterday, on the SEC coaches teleconference, and he said that if we're going to be competitive, we need double of what we've had NIL. If you are able to double your collective overnight, where does that put you in the SEC hierarchy, do you think?
You know, I think if it depends on, I think if you look across the whole campus or across the whole school or just between football, but I mean, I think Coach Pittman was spot on as far as being competitive in the SEC. I think for what the collective has been able to do for what it has this year has been phenomenal, right? I mean, there's teams out there, who is it? I think Mississippi State, I don't remember the reported figures, but they're not doing so hot right now. And they spent a lot, or Florida State, it was one of my, I think. And so, I mean, I think it is important for the funding, but you know, I think having great coaches, I think like we do is also just as, if not more important, creating a successful team. But as far as ranking in the SEC, like I said, I honestly wouldn't want to hazard a guess of where that puts us, but I'm sure, I know Coach probably has a better sense of what other football programs are doing. So I would have to defer to him on that.
So much of this conversation focuses on football and men's basketball, but every sport, every coach tells you, hey, we need something to be competitive in our fields. How are the other sports doing at Arkansas from your perspective?
You know, there is a lot of opportunity. I think we have a number of donors who do support the other sports directly, right? I mean, there's a lot of individual boosters. We, as the collective, we tend to kind of showcase all the sports whenever we're meeting with people, just kind of so they can understand the full breadth of the student athletes at the University of Arkansas. I can't really get into specific numbers, but we do kind of pitch every time we're meeting with a potential corporate partner. We pitch the gymnastics team. We talk about the women's basketball team. There's a good bit of support for track and field, soccer, kind of everything that we do, tennis. Really just kind of highlighting the full scope of the student athletes and their great work there, that and the amazing talent that we have there. Like I said, it's working through kind of more kind of on a one-on-one basis with potential donors who are interested in supporting those sports.
So we'll get you out of here with this. I mean, if you were going to make a 30-second sales pitch for Arkansas Eds for somebody who's never heard of it or they've been on the fence, what would you tell them?
You know, it like I mentioned earlier, kind of NIL is kind of the current state that we're in right now. And just really in order to really retain and recruit the best talent that we have, we need support. And like I said, there's lots of ways to get involved, whether it's a corporate partnership, whether it's a monthly subscription, whether it's – buying a good six pack of beer of Tusk at your local liquor store, whatever your interest might be, there's a way for you to get involved.
All right, Kyle, appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much.
And we appreciate you being with us. We appreciate Kyle May for his time at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club today. Hope you enjoyed our conversation with him. Again, if you want to learn more about the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club with Ken Hatfield on the way there next month, go to OzarksTix.com. We will be back with another podcast tomorrow. Tim Fletcher, who hosts a radio show in Shreveport, will join us to talk about Louisiana Tech, give us a little bit more of insight into the Bulldogs football program. We'll talk Razorback basketball with Anthony Christensen as the Razorbacks get ready to host Little Rock tomorrow night at Bud Walton Arena. And Ethan Westerman will be here, and we will give our weekend predictions, not just for Arkansas-Louisiana Tech, but all the games that mean something around the SEC and the country this week. Hope we'll see you at WholeHogSports.com. Until then, have a great day, everyone. Hope to see you tomorrow on our podcast.